Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Susie Perry.
And I'm Jason Bradbury with a big thanks to CEX for sponsoring this week's episode.
Yeah, it's the start of the year. The bank balance is recovering, which makes it the perfect time for a little bit of tech bargain hunting.
Yes, yeah, so if you've got some tech that you're no longer using, like phones, controllers, cameras, that sort of thing, trade them in at CEX and turn that clutter into cash or credit.
Yeah, then put it towards some properly refurbished kit. Phones, tablets, consoles, games and cameras without paying the full price.
Everything is tested, pre-loved and comes with a 5-year warranty.
So head to webuy.com or pop into a CEX near you and see what your old tech is worth. Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast and our first inbox edition of the year. And this is the episode where you take control. Your questions, your wins, your tech disasters. It's all coming straight from the inbox.
That's right. We've opened the inbox, we've braced ourselves and we're ready to get stuck in. So buckle up. This is the Gadget Show inbox.
Right, let's dive straight in. First up then, Ben Carter would like to know, which launch event have you been to that was most unintentionally hilarious? I think a lot of them are quite funny, unintentionally. What do you reckon?
Well, it's got to be that Russian robotics demonstration last year, isn't it?
Last year, yeah.
The one with the next generation autonomous humanoid, apparently, made a grand entrance and then immediately just went, you know, arse over tit.
It just looked like he'd had a bottle of vodka before he came on stage. Yeah.
But it was funny because I think, you know, a lot of people are upset with Russia for obvious reasons. And so that was another reason why everyone kind of thought it was funny. I'm guessing that, you know, I don't know whether how advanced their robotics division is. But if that's anything to go by, clearly not. I mean, I actually do remember one on a personal level. So I hosted an event for Samsung. I think it was in somewhere like Germany. And then it was a big unpacking of, you know, the Samsung watch and the phone and all the rest of it. And then the next year, they booked Michael Bay, the famous Hollywood director, you know, directed Transformers. It turned out that he's a really good director, but he's not a very good public speaker because he froze mid-delivery of the big event and just walked off stage. It's something you can watch it on YouTube. It was an absolute disaster. So yeah, I remember that.
I'm just going to use this to have a small rant, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
I don't like, that's a job for a presenter, a broadcaster. So just give the job to a presenter or a broadcaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if you
that's
want to
I
have
thought.
A Hollywood director, have them on as well as a broadcaster, so they're supported. But it happens time and time and time again, where they, you know, book other people to do things, and it's just, it's like the FIFA thing earlier this year. It was absolutely bloody awful. Anyway, moving along. but I think that robot thing was funny because it had been so super hyped beforehand about how good the balance was. Just going back to that. Right, anyway, Lucas Harrington has got a question. What was the most overhyped gadget of 2025? Last year's over... So I think for me it was staying on Samsung, actually, not bashing them or anything, but the Galaxy Ring. I thought that was... You know, it got sort of hyped and teased for what felt like forever, all these mysterious trailers and dramatic music. And it was a good, like, PR swish, talking of the next era of personal health. So, you know, you have these sky-high expectations. And then it finally arrived, and it was basically a really nice smart ring with sleep tracking, heart rate and stress scores. It was good, but it wasn't revolutionary, was it? I don't think.
Yeah. I think, Susie, it's because it's from Samsung, isn't it, that we were disappointed. I mean, it's a perfectly good, adequate sleep tracker, you know.
Yeah.
But I think we expected more. I agree. There was a real buzz behind it. I think, Susie, to a certain extent, AI might be one of the most overhyped things of 2025. Yeah. I know that might surprise you, but, you know, because I'm a real advocate of AI and I enjoy using large language models. But I think with each iteration last year, great forward leaps were promised. And with the exception of maybe Claude by Anthropic and its ability to code, which to all intents and purposes is extraordinary. My interaction with, you know, Grok and an OpenAI, for example, I wasn't doing much stuff differently at the end of 2025 to what I was doing at the end of 2024. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and also the same with video. Like, video dropped, it was extraordinary, but it hasn't really moved on. It's still the video, what I'm saying is text to video or image to video creation. You know, you could argue it's extraordinary, but over the course of 12 months, I don't think it's extraordinarily better than it was.
No.
So what I mean, you know what I mean? If I ask it to create some video, which sometimes when I'm editing the movie, I'll use AI to get me, to get me across a problem because I can't go out and film something, like a cutaway of something, for example. And it'll still do that thing where it just creates complete weird stuff in the background, or people that disappear into walls, or writing that doesn't make any sense. And so I'm kind of waiting. In fact, if I'm honest, I'm concerned, to extend the question from our great podcast listener or viewer, that 2026 may be the moment when the hallucinatory aspect of AI, so its ability, its weakness for making stuff up and just and lying to you and telling you stuff that just doesn't exist, and that's the same thing that happens visually when you see weird things in pictures and video, but that's going to prove itself to be a much bigger problem than maybe we're all admitting.
Well, I think we're already seeing the downside and the dark side, aren't we, of images and so on. I mean, all the stuff with Grok has been in the news recently, and, you know, going to legal levels. So we could be seeing.
Yeah, I'm not totally down on it, but I just think it is interesting, isn't it, when you stop and take stock because of a good question like this. You do realise, actually, that there are some issues there that, which are going to be interesting to see whether they're resolved or not.
Yeah, and some serious legal issues as well going on. So there's
around
a
privacy.
Lot of hurdles ahead. Yeah. Right, moving on to Sophie Talbot's question. She said, if you can take one recent gadget back to the early gadget show day, so we're talking about going back to 2004, which is when we started the gadget show, which one would have blown your mind the most? I'll kick off with this, if you don't mind. I'm going to say the Nintendo Switch 2, because if you go back to 2004, imagine us back in the early gadget show days reviewing like clunky handhelds and pixelated screens. And suddenly, someone hands you a hybrid console that plays big console grade games on the go rather at 1080p and 120Hz, and then you dock it at home and boom, 4K gaming on your TV. I know it's including like a lot of stuff like 4K and stuff, which would have individually blown our mind at the time as well, but our jaws would have just hit the studio floor, wouldn't they?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a really good one. In fact, on the gaming theme, I'd add the Steam Deck to that. I would have been mind blown by the Steam Deck. I still play with my Steam Deck at least once a week. And I'll play cloud-based games via my Xbox account. And they are super smooth. And I can tell you that back in the day, I forget what it was called, On Live, I think it was called, we reviewed the first ever, well, certainly one of the first, if not the first, cloud-based gaming services on the Gadget Show. And it was terrible. It was so juddery. The game frame rate was almost unplayable. That is not the case now. And my Steam Deck, with also its ability to play games natively, is absolutely extraordinary. I play Cyberpunk 2077 regularly. I've been playing Ark Raiders. It's my favorite game now on the Steam Deck, and it plays brilliantly. So yeah, I think two gaming devices, Suze, is a good answer to that question.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect example, isn't it, of tech catching up with imagination. If we'd have had a Switch 2 in 2007, we'd have declared it the future is here in our hands. I'm sure we would have done. Right, here's one from Harry McLean. How long do you have to keep a Christmas present before it's socially acceptable to sell it or trade it in?
God, that's a goodie, isn't it?
Do you know what? I just think if you know you're not going to use it, just get rid of it. Trade it.
Yeah.
You know where to go, obviously.
I think you probably guess where we would recommend that you take it on the high street.
Just get your bag of swag and go and get what you want. Because what's the point of having something sitting in a corner or in a box or in a drawer and you're not using it when you could trade it in for something that you really want? So, I suppose if you live with the person that's bought you something, then you've got like a bit more of a difficult conversation. But
that's tricky, yeah. If it's your partner.
Yeah, and they've bought you something you don't want.
Then don't trade it in.
Oh yeah, trade it in.
If you still have a relationship, no.
No, I don't. Yeah, but just
so I love it. Oh,
if they bought you a gadget you don't like, how well do they really know you?
That's true.
Paul Trine says, by the way, what gadget was it that you had that you wanted to trade in? Let us know. We'd like to know that.
Maybe Paul, we'll buy it.
Maybe we'll do like a swap shop here on air. Paul Trine says, what's one gadget trend from 2025 that you secretly hope never returns in 2026?
Well, I'm going to say, yeah, the charger gate, the issue that we had with Apple deciding that apparently we don't need chargers anymore for certain types of laptops. You know, nothing says premium experience like unboxing 2,000 quid's worth of MacBook and realizing that the first thing you've got to do is go back to the shop and buy a plug.
I completely agree with you, and various other companies are doing the same thing. Luke Little, which recent gadget had the most pointless AI feature shoved into it for no reason, and will more come in 2026? Which recent gadget? Gosh, I mean, so many of them, I think, had AI for no reason. I would like, for me, it's things like smart fridges with AI meal suggestions. I mean, shove it. No, I don't want my fridge to give me meal suggestions with when you've got you know, half a packet of cheese, some ravioli, and half a cabbage.
Suze, I agree. I think it's ridiculous. In fact, but then it always happens. I guess I'm a bit kind of numb to it, really. Do you remember the toothbrush? Didn't we test a toothbrush?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
With AI brushing maps.
Yeah.
You know, because what I really need first thing in the morning is the dental heat vision report on my teeth that's optimised by AI.
No one's got time for that, have they?
No, it's ridiculous. And actually, the Toy Fair report that I did in the last full episode of the Gadget Show podcast, that was full of AI toys.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, and you do wonder to what extent the AI algorithms are really being used. To what extent is AI proven to actually even exist in some of the gadgets that were being sold, you know?
Right then, it's our first inbox edition of the year, and I thought we'd mark the occasion with another top 10. Nothing too taxing. So today, Jace, you're guessing the top 10 gadget flops by estimated money lost. So I'm going to name the gadget in question, and you need to tell me where you think it sits in the top 10.
Right.
So number one is the worst performing, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Where does this sit then in the top 10?
Come on.
Juicero, 2016 to 2017. It was a Wi-Fi connected juicer that squeezed juice packs until journalists proved that you could squeeze them by hand.
It's 10.
No, not.
Hang on, no.
It's number 9. It's in at number 9. It lost $120 million and became a meme. So that's right. That's number 9.
I love it.
Okay, here we go. Here's another one. Yeah. HD DVD.
Which was available on the Xbox.
So 2006 to 2008. So Toshiba backed rival to the Blu-ray in the HD format wars. Studios, retailers and consumers were forced to choose sides. You remember this whole battle, obviously. Where do you reckon that sits?
Well, it was Microsoft backed as well. So they would have put a lot of money into it.
Yeah. So the money went, you know, factories, subsidies, licensing.
That's got to be like in the top three.
A total abandonment.
I'm a warm.
But you are warm. You're very warm with that top three.
Number three.
Yes!
Yay! I got one right. It's the only one I'll get right, but I got it right.
That's good. Right, okay. Yeah. You've got that one. Okay. On a similar kind of theme then, Sony Betamax. 1975 to 1984. Technically, obviously, was superior to VHS, as we knew, but with shorter recording times and stricter licensing, VHS won by being cheaper, longer, and everywhere. Betamax became shorthand for losing despite being better. So the money kind of was spread over the years, but losing the VHS war cost Sony a dominant home video market.
It certainly did.
Yeah, where do you think that sits?
Five.
Close.
Four.
Six.
Six.
Six, yeah. $300 to $500 million was the long-term loss there. All right, so jumping back 10 years or so, Google Glass, which I adored.
Oh, my gosh.
As you can remember. Hated this. The futuristic head-mounted display that arrived before society was ready. Look, so not ready for that. Expensive, yeah. Awkward, limited battery life and massive privacy concerns from me. Wearing them in public that made you that person, that stalker person, quietly pulled from consumers. So the money all went in R&D, marketing, fast shutdown. Salvaged later for enterprise, but the consumer version was a huge fail that never saw the light of day.
Well, I mean, I don't know to what extent they went fully into releasing this. I don't remember it really being that easy to get hold of, although it could have been because they'd bankrupt the project. But
yeah, I mean, it didn't see the light of day, did it, on a consumer level? But the background on it.
But what I mean, yeah. So you mean the investment? That
yeah,
they the
would R&D, have lost, yeah. The manufacturing, marketing.
I'm going to say
stuff.
7 or 8. Feeling.
Well, I can tell you that it was 4. It's in at number 4.
Really?
Because they lost $500 to $600 million on that.
Wow.
That is a massive elephant, isn't it? The Segway PT.
Yeah.
2001 to 2015, hyped as the device that would change cities. Instead, it found a niche with tourists, security guards and warehouse floors. Never scaled, never transformed transport. The money went
found
in
a niche
development.
Security guards.
No, it's true though.
Mall cop, isn't it? You're referring to, yeah.
Yeah. Production, marketing, and it really never came close to mass adoption, did it? So where do you reckon that sits? It's over 14 years.
I mean, I would argue, not relevant to this competition, but the technology that it gave birth to was game-changing.
Yeah.
For so many devices, the use of accelerometers and, you know, the digital compass that enables you to move over a fulcrum and move your, you know, intuitively move around is what I ride every day on my one wheel now.
Yeah.
So it created really positive waves, but the device itself was way too expensive, lethal on the knees. Used to get into a kind of like death rattle if you went to the wrong angle.
We had a lot of fun on the gadget show with these though. I remember doing that cross country one, that sort of rugged one. Do you remember that one?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to say number 7.
It's number 10.
No, is it really?
Yeah, okay. It rounds out the top 10. So there's a loss of $100 to $120 million. So
which in these terms, it ain't bad.
No, exactly. I mean, the juicer lost more than that. That was at number 9. Nokia N-Gage.
Oh, I loved my N-Gage.
I know you did. 2003 to 2005, a phone console hybrid that pleased nobody apart from Jason Bradbury. So you had to hold it sideways to make calls. Games were really expensive and the control layout was poor. Nokia spent heavily on exclusive titles, which nobody apart from Jason played. So the money basically went into custom hardware, exclusive games marketing, but with tiny sales of 1 to somebody that potentially would live in Cornwall. Oh, there's 2.
Oh, and our producer just chimed in. He got 1. So that's 2. Yeah. I'm going to say number 7.
It's number 5.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's number 5 because it lost between $400 and $450 million. So it was a huge loss leader, yeah. Microsoft Zune.
Oh, yeah, MP3 player.
Okay,
yeah.
So between 2006 and 2011, this was Microsoft's attempt to take on the iPod with custom hardware, music store, a lot of marketing spend.
Big
it
time.
Wasn't terrible at all. It was just it was just a bit tardy. It was a bit too late. So Apple kind of had already owned the ecosystem and Zune.
Well, you're not kidding. What is this called, this here show? Is it called the Zunecast, the gadget show Zunecast?
Oh, no. Exactly. No. The money was spent on multiple hardware generations, global marketing, a music store, and 5 years of persistence. They kept on going.
We've only got 1, 2, or...
Yeah, you've got 3 already. That was HD DVD.
It's not number 1, is it?
No, it's number 2. $1.5 to $2 billion lost on the Microsoft Zune. That's so much money. That is so much money to lose and keep going as well, not even cutting their losses.
Stick at it.
The Apple Newton, 1993 to 1998, so sort of 6 year period there.
Yeah.
An early PDA with handwriting recognition. That
famously, didn't recognise your handwriting.
No, it really didn't. It didn't. brilliant idea, obviously. Underpowered tech.
Beautiful.
Terrible battery life, terrible. And a market that kind of didn't really exist, I suppose. So Steve Jobs killed it immediately on his return. So he knew. Steve knew. The money went in 5 years of R&D, niche sales. And like I said, yeah, when Jobs came back, he just laid it to bed. So where do you think that sits?
7.
You always go for 7. It's number 8.
Every time. Is it number 8?
Number 8.
I'll count that as a win.
Yeah, it lost between, yeah, close enough, 150 and 200 million. Steve Jobs saved, oh, losing, wow, more there. You got 2 left to get. Number 1 and number 7.
Yes.
The Amazon Fire Phone. Amazon's phone was designed to sell Amazon services first and be a phone second.
Oh, God. Great customer journey that would have been.
Its headline 3D interface gimmick fell flat and the app ecosystem was, well, it was pretty weak, really. And Amazon officially wrote it off within months, so it wasn't around for very long.
The fact that you said it wasn't around for long makes me think that maybe they didn't get too deep into debt with it, unlike, say, Zune, that they stuck at for the 5 years.
Exactly. That is, you're getting it, yeah.
Number 7.
Yeah, you're right.
Finally, I got it right. Number 7.
It's in at number 7. It lost 170 million. They just, when they realised, they just got rid of it. So they didn't waste any more money. But they still lost 170 million, which is, no one's got that down the back of the sofa, have they? Well, I think no surprising for guessing where this one sits. But I shall go through it anyway. Mm-hmm. Samsung's Galaxy Note 7 is the number one loss leader, a genuinely brilliant flagship phone undone by battery design flaws. Samsung squeezed too much power into too little space. They rushed it to market. Then they compounded the error by issuing replacement phones that also caught fire. Do you remember that? And they were banned immediately by all the airlines.
Oh,
so the money went into Samsung recalling and destroying every single unit that was ever made. And it cost them $5.3 billion.
Oh, my God.
And that is the biggest loss maker.
Well, Susie, you have blown my mind. What an education that has been. In how not to launch a product. Extraordinary.
I always think it's interesting with technology and what works and what doesn't work. And you genuinely can get a brilliant product that's just mistimed it doesn't work and it costs billions. It's, you know, the stars really kind of have to align. You have to have somebody that's bang on it in terms of taking things to market at the right time. So, really interesting. I hope you enjoyed that. That's a wrap.
I really enjoyed it. And I hope, well, you didn't mean me. You mean the listeners and the viewers,
I mean you as well. It's also nice to talk about old technology, isn't it, that you like, that maybe flopped a little bit. So,
I love the Apple Newton. I remember I was a researcher on, was it Going Live, the Saturday Morning Kids Show?
Yeah.
And at the BBC, whichever one it was, I was a researcher on it. Alive and kicking. That's right, live and kicking. And I brought the Apple Newton into the office, and I got them to put it on the show, and we reviewed it. Oh. I mean, obviously, I wasn't a presenter then. It was Andy Peters or Emma Forbes, I think. But I thought it was an amazing device, probably part of the start of my love affair with Apple. Which was the case at the Gadget Show, much less so now. But the interesting thing is that handwriting recognition, which was its biggest selling point, just didn't work. Hilarious.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's Inbox Edition. Thank you for every message that you've sent. Genuinely, please just keep them coming. We'll answer any questions you've got.
Yeah, more. If your gadgets are misbehaving, syncing with things that absolutely shouldn't be synced with, or causing full-scale chaos, we want to hear about it. Drop us a message on our socials or email us at contact@northone.tv.
Yeah, and a huge thank you to CEX for backing the podcast. If you're after a bargain, upgrade, hunting down a retro classic, or just want to turn that drawer of forgotten tech into cash or credit if someone gave you something for Christmas that you don't like, then head to webuy.com or pop into one of nearly 400 of their stores across the UK. Remember that everything that they sell comes with a 5-year warranty.
And of course, if you haven't already, please hit follow or subscribe. It's really important. We're trying to grow the Gadget Show podcast and make sure that we can bring you great content week after week, fresh gadgets and all the usual mayhem, but we can only do it if you follow and subscribe.
Okay, see you soon.
See you soon.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.